Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hello, Carlton.
Hello, Will. Austin, you said hello, Carlton. Hello, Will. How are you?
And this is a special episode. We don't have a guest for a change, but we're going to do a recap of DjangoCon US, which we both attended last week. This will come out a week or two later. But lots to talk about. The message boards are blowing up. This week's Django newsletter is super, super long. And what are your quick takeaways from the event and seeing Boston for the first time?
Okay. Oh, right. Well, so there's two things. First, the event is, in this applies equally to DjangoCon Europe. It's just been so good in both the conferences to finally get back together after so long. I think people were really struggling with the pandemic. I think the community was sort of feeling a bit like, is it still going to work? Is it still going to work? And it's just as soon as you're in the same room, it's like, yes, it's, you know, here we are. And, you know, and then, you know, the vibrant in-person thing, that's just amazing. And then the second thought I had to say just about DjangoCon US particularly is I just have to praise their COVID policy. So they had this very strict COVID policy about vaccines and about pre-testing before you arrived and about mask, wearing masks inside the venue, outside. No, it was okay, no mask, but inside the mask. And whilst it's a bit like, oh, this is a bit of a pain, is this, it turns out that it's 100% successful. I don't know if nobody got COVID there, but I've seen so many tweets and reports that, you know, negative tests when you get home. I'm sure people are tired, they might have a sore throat or whatever, but they haven't gone and caught COVID at the conference. Whereas I've seen other in-person conferences where it's perhaps been not so strict and it's like, oh, I got COVID. Oh, I got COVID. Oh, I got COVID. So honestly, I just have to salute that 100%. It was a tough choice to make. You know, there was a lot, some controversy about it. I think they've absolutely made the right decision and they've implemented it really well. And it's got a proven positive result. So well done, DjangoCon, for that.
I know this is going to be DjangoCon US focused because that's the one I attended, but I don't want to skip over DjangoCon Europe, which you also attended a couple weeks before. So we can, you should sprinkle that in. With the videos are up. We're promoting them on the newsletter, but you know, there was a bit, actually, I think twice the size DjangoCon Europe this year was.
Yeah, the billions was, of people.
Six, I think there's 600.
Pent up demand, you know, it's like the faucet's been off and then all of a sudden it's open and just, yeah.
Because typically I think it's a little smaller in person, right? Typically DjangoCon US is like 500-600 and Europe, I don't know, a little less?
Yeah, in my experience, it's been slightly smaller in previous years, whereas this year it was a lot bigger. I don't know how that translates into future years. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, what can I say? It was lovely. I mean, the venue in Porto was very big and they didn't have such a strict COVID policy, but I mean, I didn't get COVID there. I don't know how other people do, but it, you know, it was fine. There was lots of outdoor space. There was big meeting rooms, you know, if you've got ventilation, but the main sort of worry area, I guess, is in the seating bit where you've got, you know, the talks and you're all crowded in a space and what should we do? Especially after 2 years of not seeing anybody and not doing these events, and then it's an in-person event, and there's a bit of, I don't know what the correct protocol is.
Well, I do know that PyCon US was speaking to the Django US organizers about what worked, because you know, everyone's trying to sort this out, and you know, the US one was more on the strict side, but it's not that big an inconvenience. And
no,
as you say, like some past conferences, everyone's been testing positive after, or you know, either on Twitter or anecdotally, and so, anyways,
for such a small inconvenience, my view is for such a small inconvenience for such a successful result. You know, seeing so many people test negative afterwards, it's like, yeah, okay, it's worth the inconvenience. I have no problem at all with that. So that was my view on it. How was Boston? Boston was nice because on the way I stopped off to see you, and Will's always telling me that he lives in Brookline and should he move to the country? I'm always like, yeah, move to the country. But I went to see Will and his family in Brookline and that was very nice. So now I'm like, you know, you should stay in Brookline. It's lovely.
Yeah, now you and my wife are like, nope, we're never leaving. So no, right. You know, but I have to say fall in particular is a pretty, I mean, you got to see foliage, right? You hadn't seen foliage in a while.
I hadn't seen like the trees putting on that autumn display type thing. And also I had, it was like 25 degrees, beautiful weather. What's that in new money? 60, 70 degrees.
Yeah, it was very warm. It was 60s. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was lovely. And, you know, perhaps if it had been raining and miserable, I wouldn't have been so enamored. But.
Yep. And you won over my kids. My 2-year-old still asks about you even this morning. So,
Good. I like to hear that.
you know, so when your four are acting up, you can be like, you know, there's three across the pond that appreciate my presence.
Yeah, good, good, good. I like it. You'll have to come and see us in Spain. Well,
yes, I know. Well, next GenCon Europe is May in Edinburgh, which I would love to attend. I hope I can do that. But okay, certainly so, I'll...
Oh, go on. Yeah, go on, Karen. So no, it's going to come.
I'm just plugging it.
Yeah, GenCon Europe in Edinburgh. So I was going to cut over you then with, we both gave talks. Let's talk about your talks, your talk, and then we talk about my talk. Then we cut back to, you know, round up about the conference. So
okay, so these might be out by the time this comes out. Yours, the European version, is out, so we'll put it in the notes. Yeah, my talk, 45 minutes, the Jenga jigsaw puzzle, aligning all the pieces, trying to provide a comprehensive look about what is Jenga, what is the entirety of the framework, and do some high-level code examples. So I think the talk went okay. I wasn't as prepared as I have been for past ones, partly because there's no Django Boston meetup anymore where I would normally run through it. So
you'll have to start one, Will.
Oh my God. I know. Well, someone needs to. Well, and there were people, one of the sponsors, Path AI, of the conference is based in Boston and would provide hosting space before. So yeah, it's doable. But yeah, I was pleased that the talk happened. I think it'll be, I was actually talking to some people from Cactus Group yesterday about mentorship, because they have, that's an agency with about 24 developers in North Carolina, which is likely where JangoCon US will be next year. And they have some mentorship programs. And it's hard for, there's this imposter syndrome when you're learning web development that you just have no idea what you know and don't know. And so the goal of the talk was to say, here's as much as I can show you a roadmap of Django and all the pieces, you know, the beginning pieces, intermediate, advanced pieces. So you can check things off and know, oh yeah, there's signals or middleware. And along the way, the biggest thing for me is I wanted to have a detailed drawing of the request response cycle so someone can see the file system, WSGI, again, middleware, like just how these things all connect. I'd never seen that really when I was starting out. And there's some talks now that are quite good that go in detail on this, but this was a high level overview where we built up all the pieces. So that's the goal, a beginner level talk. I want to do a deep dive talk, I think, next time, but I hope this talk will be helpful for people.
Yeah, I watched it. I thought it would be very handy in terms of like just that that orientation. Like, because when you come in, it's like, oh wow, there's this kind of flood of information that you get.
Yeah, like what are the batteries? It's like, well, you know, here's the auth system, and like that's great, but like, to appreciate it, you have to know what sessions and cookies are, which if you're new to web development, you have no idea what they are. So, you know, I introduced the auth system and was like, here's a very, very basic configuration. And then here's quickly how sessions and cookies work, because you should know that. And then all auth and yeah, just trying to go. I mean, I ran out of time. I went like 3x speed for the last the last couple of minutes because I was so nervous. I didn't look at the person giving me cue cards, but I was trying to. Yeah, basically, how do I distill 10 years into just, here's 45 minutes of all I can give you? You know, because there's thing is, even the command line, like I have a little bit on the command line, because like just this morning, someone emailed me for my APIs book, where there's a section where I say, open up another a console, because you're running the background server, the Django server, and then you spin up a React one. And this person was like, I don't know how to open up another console. You know, I mean, it seems trivial, but stuff like that happens all the time, and it's just like a full stop, and it's not the doc's job to do that, but I'm fairly attuned to those pain points, so I try to make the ramp up as smooth as I can and take 10 seconds to say, hey, this is how you do that, or, you know, I mean, I think a talk I could do off the top of my head that I mentioned was like, choose your own adventure, Django. Like, there's so many things where it doesn't really, you know... Do I have a period at start project? Do I not? Do I? How do I configure my URLs? Do I use function-based views? There's so many things that for us, it's like, oh, here we go again with these religious debates. But it's a full stop for a beginner because they lose confidence. So trying to stay,
I really liked that about your talk, how each thing, so not only did you introduce all these things and it just like they keep coming and they keep coming and they keep coming because there are so many batteries, but for each one, you're like, and of course there's this question or this question. If you're a beginner, that might stump you. Just pick one, doesn't matter, you know, and you move on. But, you know, I remember beginning and I don't know, I had some, I don't know, version conflict with some PHP thing. And literally I was just like, that's it. I can't progress anymore.
Yeah, yeah,
until I was able to find a workaround.
I think, well, and both of us are self-taught and self-taught, you know, not in a boot camp or with a formal internship, like, you know, a book and a computer and internet connection and banging a head against the wall. So, yeah, I've been stuck for weeks on stuff, you know, which is such a waste of time. But I didn't know any better. The Django forum didn't exist. I didn't know how to ask for help. You know, I think hopefully this podcast, one of the things we do is, and one of the things I'm thinking about this with the mentorship conversation I had is beginners don't know, like, when they're stuck, right? It's like, you know, you got to, right? So if someone comes to us, like I saw this at the conference for you. I mean, you're quite the celebrity. People come up with questions. And, you know, if somebody has made a go of it and you can tell and they say, okay, I'm trying to do this thing and I researched this, this, and this, and they're just stuck, like, that's great. Like, put your hand up. But if sometimes people are just being lazy, right? So, like, you know, don't be lazy, but don't spend days on something that you could get help for. Like, you know, ask in the forum, ask in Stack Overflow. There are places for people to get you unstuck because that's, I've been there and it's, you know, you shouldn't be that stuck when you're starting out.
It's programming at its best is like puzzle solving, right? So a puzzle solving, if you've got the answers in the back of the book and you just open the puzzle, and then you go straight to the answer in the back of the book, that's not much fun. That's not, you're not getting the value out of it. But it, you know, sometimes you do need the answers in the back of the book to help you forward. And the challenge, I guess, for a beginner is how to know which is which. Is this just something I've got to work out, or am I really stuck?
Yeah, am I dense? Well, and the thing is that feeling is what we, you know, professional developers, we have all the time. It's just, you know, more advanced things, but it's, you sort of like build up the muscle memory for like that feeling, you know, and then you get to a point where it's like boring. If you're like, oh, I know how to do all this. It's like, it's not enough of a challenge.
Yeah. We can always play with tooling at that point. And,
you know. Yeah. Right. Then we go down the rabbit hole of like, I'm going to reconfigure start project or, you know, all these things. So I try to resist that, but I see the appeal at a certain point. But anyways, enough about me. Let's talk about your talk, because you updated it a little bit from the European version.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, I basically gave the same talk and they both went well, but I'd say that my European one was better timed. Like, I blew the timing slightly for my US talk.
I saw your European talk, you had like 42 minutes and your US one was 25.
Right. So it's quite a lot tighter. And I tried to compress it and I didn't quite manage to compress it. So I again, same as you, I was rushing right at the end. I was flicking through. But I think if you watch both talks, you get a full, you know,
feel. I mean,
you could combine. I mean, I think I went into more depth at the beginning where perhaps I should have rushed on the thing.
Well, but your talk was on async. Let's say that. Yeah. It was about async. Yeah.
So I was talking about Async Django, and I called it the practical guide you've been awaiting for, because the awaiting for is the joke on the async await syntax. And obviously, once I've thought of that, I had to go with the title. So it was kind of, I thought the title, and then I'm right, I better build a talk around that.
Yeah.
but the idea was that, I mean, async's really complicated. And it just is a matter of plain fact that once you adopt async in your application, it's like twice as complicated or three times as complicated. You know, you just making it harder by doing that. So, okay, well, what's the benefit and when would we use that? And so I just introduced a few basic async IO example to show a couple of things about the event loop. And then, you know, can you use that for background tasks in Django? Because if you're running under ASGI, you sort of kind of could, but you don't have like all the error handling and retries and scheduling and all these nice things that a proper queue is going to give you. So you're still probably better off using a proper queue implementation than just a sort of quick and dirty create task with async IO. And then what? Oh, my favorite example is aggregating views. So for years I've been building REST APIs, and then you have a client app that wants to fetch, I don't know, a list, a detail view plus a related list view all in one go. So it only has to make one HTTP request rather than, you know, multiple, because on a mobile application, it's going to be slow and battery draining and painful. And so you create a little proxy view that sits in front of those two REST views, makes the REST views, and then aggregates them and returns them. And we always used to do that with Node.js because, you know, that was what you did. But now with async def views in Django, even if you're running under WSGI, you can write that view in Django. And it keeps your code much simpler. So you've got, the example I gave is a hotel detail with a room list. So you've got a hotel with a list of rooms and prices, and you want to combine them to return one. And instead of spinning up a separate server, instead of having, you know, a different technology stack, you just got a Django view with, you know, perhaps HTTPX as your async HTTP client to fetch those and combine them. And I just think that's such a beautiful pattern. And it, I've been literally been using it for years. I never got into GraphQL because I had this pattern and I was established with it, and I never felt the need for the complexity of GraphQL.
You waited it out. I think the pendulum definitely swung back.
Well, that's recently people have been saying, well, you know, GraphQL is sort of fading from favor. And sometimes these questions come up, what technology did you wait out and not ever learn? And well, I might one day be able to answer GraphQL. I'm not saying I will, because, you know, GraphQL still is very rich and mature and there's lots of power in it that, you know, but for me, it kind of feels like that.
I mean, yeah, I remember, I think it was 2019, DjangoCon US, Ed Rivas had a tutorial. So one of the, you know, 3 hour long things on GraphQL. And
there's a GraphQL tutorial at DjangoCon this year, at DjangoCon US this year. Yeah, and there's the Strawberry package and Django Strawberry. And like GraphQL's not, I'm not dissing GraphQL, but I've always been a bit of a skeptic. I've never got involved in it. I don't really know it. I've never architected an application that used GraphQL. I've worked on applications that use them, but not, they weren't my creations. And it kind of feels like, okay, maybe I can just never have to learn that technology. It's like,
yeah. Well, and that's part of, I think, getting beyond the beginner phase is there's just this, you know, you go on Hacker News, and there's a new technology, a new thing every week. And at a certain point, you're just like, you know what, if I need it, like I try to take a look and peek around and read the Django News newsletter, but you don't have to learn everything. Like the fundamentals don't change, and you know, you don't need to have the burden of feeling like being left behind, especially with front end stuff. I know I really liked your talk.
Go on, Karen. I'm on a Hacker News blackout at the moment. I periodically just block it.
Adam Johnson's putting up the good fight. He's on there like multiple times a week. So
yeah, well,
but then he puts out like a half dozen posts a week. So
anyway, yeah, no, so I mean, I mean, me reading it. I'm not reading it.
Yeah. The orange site.
I just went through a chat example four ways, which
that was my favorite thing. Yeah, like showing, right, you know, the progression, right? Like you don't have to use it. And if you are going to use it, the thought process, I think, yeah, that was my favorite bit.
Yeah. I mean, and because the idea was to give people a sort of idea of, well, what should I do? And what are the options? And again, it's an overview, same sort of thing that you were doing, but a much narrower topic. Because async's one of those buzzwords, and the trouble with buzzwords is you go, oh, let's use it, and then you've suddenly created yourself all number of problems which you didn't need to have. You could have just used a simple polling solution or I don't know what. And so I wanted to go through that, and people were very kind. It went, you know, it seemed to go well both times, even though I was rushed. Katie McLaughlin, who was chairing, she nearly had to go and get Kojo, who was running the lightning talks, to come and time me out. But fortunately, she let me go on for a few minutes extra.
So yeah, no, she did a great job with the deep dives. Something else was the sprints. So at your suggestion, I stayed for the first day of sprints. I paid for it on the red eye back, but I can't complain to you. You and others had much longer trips. But the sprints were fantastic. I mean, it's much smaller group, and it's sort of like the core people who really want to be there. So, you know, that morning I was going to go see your, contributing to Django bit, and I got there right at 9 o'clock, and you weren't there because we'd biked down to the ocean and stuff. And so I went and had breakfast with like Jeff Triplett and Jacob Kaplan Moss, and ended up talking about the board for an hour. And then I came in, and that whole morning, you know, there were at least a half dozen or more, you know, to be clapping when someone else did a new commit somewhere to Django based on, you know, you and Marius were running around. And it's just like in a couple hours, there's so much progress made. It's really amazing to see.
Yeah. And I like the sprints. And so the last few years, in 2019, I ran it once. So I went to Copenhagen in 2019, GenCon Europe, and I was trying to lead new contributors, but I was doing it on a sort of one-by-one basis. And so I ran around and did the same sort of talk 50 times, and I was exhausted and my throat was dry, and I couldn't be in all the places I want. And there were still people who were sort of lost as to, well, what can we do? And someone suggested to me that we'd have there needs to be some kind of structure. So in DjangoCon US that year, 2019, I did a workshop and it went really well. And we had four tables or so. And that was just to try and get all the people who perhaps haven't got a project to work on or want to get contributing to Django together. And then they can sort of help each other. And then I ran it again this year in Porto and it went okay. And again here in San Diego and I thought it went really well. It was really successful. And the all it is get set up with the test suite and have a go at, find a ticket, have a go, browse through the track. Because the thing is, in Django, we've got 1,000 open tickets just under. And so if I give you a list of 1,000 tickets, you're like totally overwhelmed by what could I possibly contribute to. And then there are no easy tickets either. Like because it's 17 years old, right? So there's nothing where you just come in, snip something and there's your commit and it only took 5 seconds, right? Not every single ticket, but almost every ticket requires you to sit down, read it, open the code, have an explore, become to understand it. And I have this idea, I have this little spiel to people. People say to me, well, how can I contribute? I'm new. How can I suggest anything? It's like, well, because by the time you've spent that hour or 2 hours really digging into it, you are literally are the world expert on that ticket at that moment. And the goal of the workshop is literally to get people to have that experience so that they realize how it is that just by giving it a bit of time and love, they are legitimately able to contribute on an equal footing with anybody who's been around 10 years and, you know, millions of commits and all the rest of it. Because, you know, they, someone will come to me, they've been looking at a ticket for 2 hours and they're like, oh, Carlton, what do you think about this? And I'm like, literally, I don't know. You have to explain it to me.
Yeah,
or may not have some memory of that ticket from whenever I've come across it previously. But right now, you know, 10 times more about that ticket than I do. And then you can have a really good conversation and then they go, okay, well, I could do this. And they open a PR and it's like, yes, there's your first PR.
And in a couple of hours, you know, it was the same day, people were... You know, even though there aren't super low hanging fruit, people were finding stuff and they were submitting. You know, it was just great. It was like almost like a gong, like a sprint at work or something. I mean, there was every half hour, there was another round of applause and someone else had done their, you know, first or another commit, usually a first commit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just marvelous. So from that extent, I think the workshop was really successful. My goal for that workshop is to have that freestanding. I don't want that to depend on me. It has depended on me over the last few conferences. That's fine. It can depend on me for a couple more conferences. That's not a problem. But I would like to write that up and have that as a freestanding resource that then, you know, other sprint leaders could choose to use or not, or adapt or whatever, you know, in future Django cons.
Yeah. Well, and there were so many good ideas that came out of the conference and the sprints. I mean, one is Paolo just wrote up thoughts on the fact that core sprints. So saying, you know, can we just have 2-3 days for people to come together and do stuff on Django? Because his experience, the Plone framework, he'd use that. And so he discussed that with a number of people. He just wrote up a blog post on that. You know, that would be really exciting to do, especially if you did one, you know, could do one in the your side of the world and one in the US side of the world and just a long weekend. And then someone, I think it was Pamela Fox, said, well, you know, can we do virtual or hybrid? Some of us can't leave for whatever reason. We could, you know, I think just like a modicum of structure allows for these things to happen. And that's something that, you know, we can talk about the Django Software Foundation board, but I think that was the kind of big takeaway is there's all these ideas and we just need to get the organization right to have them happen, right? Because people on their own need a little bit of that.
Yeah, and that tied in with the other big one that came up was mentorship. We need, so Simon Charette gave a keynote on the state of the ORM, which is just a fantastic talk. You really must watch that when it comes out. But one thing he talks about is the contributors to the ORM, and I sort of over time, the pool of people who can review PRs to the ORM has never been big, but we need to make sure that it doesn't ever narrow to, you know, 2, 1, 0. Oh dear, what happens, right? We need a way of bringing on people and over a release cycle. Because let's say you add a feature to the ORM in, I don't know, and I think he did mean a full release cycle, like a 4.x or a 5.x. So that would be 4.0, 4.1, 4.2, not just 4.1. Because let's say you introduce a feature in 4.0, guaranteed that there are regressions in that don't show up until 4.2 when people upgrade from LTS to LTS. Right. And so if you've introduced a feature, you kind of still need to be around like that couple of years later.
Yeah, later.
Yeah, like you know, it's not really till say 5.0 that you think, okay, well, that feature's kind of steady now because we got through the LTS. But that it's not realistic, I think, for people to just come along and open the source code to Django.db and start reading. I mean, you can do that, and that's a great thing, and I do recommend doing that because it's not that scary, but you know, to get a comprehension of the ORM from that is asking a lot.
And unless you have a direct need that overlaps with work, it's yes. You know,
where's
I think
the time
like Mar, like you know, Marius Django fellow had that with Oracle with some of his work. I think Simon at Zapier there was some overlap, and then he continued it. But not a lot of people have jobs where hacking on the ORM is, you know, they're doing things that require that.
Right, and as well, I think over the last kind of year, I've come to realize that it's no good us just asking for more contributors because it. Like if you're basically economically privileged, then sure you can find time and we'll get the same sort of demographic, like you know, essentially white blokes from North America, Europe, you know, the global north, so to speak, who've got the economic capacity to give that kind of time. But we won't get people from a wider demographic or you know more representative of the community unless we're able to say, hey, you know what, there's an opportunity grant here that goes with this mentorship so that you've got the capacity to actually do this. So we're not asking for free labor from people who are already struggling to do it. I think, you know, I've previously done talks on your web framework needs you and your web framework still needs you. And I've done get contributing to Django and how that does that benefits you and it benefits your career and it's a great learning opportunity and all these things. But that doesn't remove the economic barriers to people contributing. So I think as part of thinking about mentorship, thinking about the future sustainability of the maintainership of Django, of the Django project, the Django code, we also need to be thinking about opportunity grants and funding for that so that we can widen access.
Yes, I think it's also would be more fulfilling for people like you and Simon and Marius and others who are in there to mentor. I mean, not for everyone, but for many of those people, I think it would add an additional layer of, it would feel good, right? I mean, yeah. You know, because you all aren't going to be there forever, but if there was a sense of handing off the torch in good hands, I think that would either, if not prolong how long you'd stay, just make it more rewarding to keep doing it again and again and again.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that contributing directly, like just fixing tickets, it's great, it's good fun, and I always, in a way, it's kind of like the feeling I have about freelancing after freelancing for years and years, was that great, it's brilliant, freelancing is brilliant, you pay, you know, you get a good paycheck and you know, get to work on interesting stuff, but at the end of it, you're kind of no closer to your long-term goals, and when the paycheck's gone, you're back sort of where you were, and so you have to carry on, it's a bit like a treadmill, it's a bit like, well, hang on, how long can I do this? I mean, till I'm 80, perhaps not. That's an interesting question. But the same with fixing tickets. It's like, well, I can fix tickets. I've been fixing tickets for years now. But there comes a point where it's going to be like, oh, you know, I haven't quite got the energy to fix tickets. Where if I can help people come along and you know, learn to fix tickets, it's like a force multiplier.
Yeah. Well, and it's also this sense of, like, I was joking with you about something the other day, like, you know, self-deprecation, you know, it's like, you don't want to just leap out, you know,
Carlton is pending deprecation.
Yeah.
he will be removed in person.
Well, you know, cause there is, you know, I think that's, there's a way to have that for involvement or just taking a little lull, you know, in not, cause right now it's like, it has been, okay, you're core, you're on the board, you're organizing a conference. And then it's just like a big drop off. So that's like, I wrote up some personal thoughts on the Django Software Foundation board because I've been having basically this whole week has been me having discussions with people about all this. Cause I really, and I've seen a lot of people are stepping forward, I think, who weren't fully aware of the need, but also weren't aware of the possibilities, you know, of I sat down with very prominent people and they're like, I have no idea what the board does. Like, I have no idea what the budget is, you know, and And so it's not a scary thing. It's like, you know, here's what it does now, but here's what it could do, right? Like, so I would, at the moment, having been on the board 3 years, it feels like whenever we come out of a conference and things and we say, Django should do all these things, the only way to move it forward is the board. And the board already has its hands full with stuff. So I think the board, I would like to see it get in a position where it's managing more than doing. Because right now, we in the board do the great deal of all these other things. So I'll link to it. I wrote up a whole long thing of thoughts on how we can do it. I think it'd be, you know, there's a number of people stepping down. I think it's great to have new people come in and come in with at least one thing they want to push. And at the same time, like Anna's stepping down, I'm probably stepping down, a couple other people are stepping down. I still want to be involved. You know, I want to be on a working group, to, you know, the mentorship thing. Like to me, I want to make that happen. So maybe you can't do that being the treasurer and all these other things. But if you're in a working group or if you're on the side, you know, you can push that forward. So that's what I would, and people have said, again, people have said, hey, is there a way to contribute? And, you know, no, we don't really have that structure. So we need to, you know, working groups, whatever it's called, we need these areas where people will say, a couple people will report to the board every so often, ask for approval or funding as they need. That's what like Paolo did with his core sprints. I mean, that's what I said to him. I was like, you know, please make an ask, because the board should exist to approve and help things, but it can't, like, we already are doing a lot of stuff. So anyways, offloading things and people, new people coming in with things they want to push. And just, mentorship, DSF grants, we can do that. Well, DjangoProject.com site. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
The things you're talking about, grants, like the idea there is like if, say, I mean, Andrew Godwin gave a great talk, which he kind of had to put together at last minute, and about the history of
Django. Can I just say, like, he put it together like less than 24 hours notice and just like, is so much better than my talk. he's been to every conference and he speaks a lot and he's Andrew, but it was just like, oh, like, what am I even doing here? But yeah, he gave a great talk on the state of Django, among other things.
At the end, he put forward some ideas of where he'd like to see Django going. One thing amongst those was he wants not just him putting forward ideas. He wants, you know, if you've got an idea, come forward and let's propose it. But two or three big projects that if they could be funded projects, that would make them much more realistic. And the whole point, I think the point with the Django grants is that if there are concrete ideas, it's easier to put together a fundraising drive, you know, and this money would go towards that than, if there's nothing specific on the agenda that we want to address.
No, absolutely. Well, and that's, you know, again, I'm always like, okay, and like, let's not just talk about it. Let's do something. So how would we do Django Software Foundation grants? Well, we have a technical board. They could, in one meeting, agree on 5-10 things that can be done in a couple month period of time by the right person. They could review who that person is. And we on the board could provide funding as needed to say, okay, like, bring serialization into Django. Okay, like, the technical board has scoped it. Like, this is what we're thinking. And then we can review, you know, over the next year, who potentially could have the time. Okay. And then what are the funding needs based on your personal situation? Like, yeah, boom. Like, we can do it. Like, I think, again, that's what it requires. And that's what the board or working groups, like, we just need that extra thing of someone to, you know, and I'm planning to push this, like, but I can't push everything.
No, you can't do it alone.
To make that happen. But, like, that's the only bit in this whole ecosystem that's missing. Like, we can get the funding, we have the people, we have the ideas, we just need that organizational structure. And that's, you know, I was able to talk multiple times with Jacob Kaplan Moss, who has said publicly he's going to run for the board again, which would be great to have, you know, a creator on there. But a lot of his focus the last few years has been around organizations and he writes wonderful pieces almost every week about this. So people who can bring knowledge from the PSF, from private companies into rethinking, you know, how Django is structured, because we haven't changed it in a while.
Yes.
And we can and should.
Yeah. And I think, it's not an excuse, but one reason has been, you know, the last couple of years, it really, with the pandemic, it's taken the wind out of a lot of everybody's sails. And so, okay, we've got a chance as we start to come out of the pandemic to re-energize. And yeah, that was the thing, to see everybody. That's the opening point, was that seeing everybody is really re-energizing. And it's like, yeah, okay, we can do this. We there's still this heart of a community here that really wants this and is really passionate about the framework and the community and the ecosystem. Let's make it happen. There was a panel. We were on a panel.
Yes.
Yeah. The end.
we were everywhere. Yeah, there was a State of Django panel that Don Wages ran, which was, I wish it could have been a lot longer. I'm sure the audience may not have felt that way because it was the last thing on Wednesday, but it was...
Say that it was interesting, and it was one of the panels that they've been to where it wasn't just people on stage just talking to themselves sort of thing, so...
it's just like wind us up. Like, what do we say in the podcast all the time? Yeah. So it was you, me, Marius, was it Rachel from Django Girls?
Rachel Calhoun, yeah.
Yep. Andrew Godwin and Jeff Triplett. Yeah. Daphna, BSF, RevSys. We covered
Jeff
a lot of...
Yeah, I mean, there were lots of films, and, you know, watch the panel when the videos come out. But Jeff made, I think, a good point, is that, you know, perhaps historically, Python sort of looked to Django as, oh, what's Django doing? Let's do that. But in many ways, in terms of particularly diversity in the steering council, Python's pushed on in front. And, you know, this ties back to your point that you were talking about, Jacob. We haven't updated the Django structures in quite a long time. And it's perhaps now time for Django to look at what's being done in Python and see if we can bring some ideas back and, you know, update. We had DEP10, which was to widen participation, but then the structure of the rules haven't quite resulted in the technical board has been the same sort of group of contributors and not as pluralistic as it could be. And so can we adjust the election rules there? Can we loosen them? Can we allow for people to tag out of contributing and then say, yeah, do you know what? After my break, I'm ready to come back and give back to the community again and have a mechanism when they can be on the steering board rather than, oh no, you haven't been contributing, therefore you're not, what's it called? Eligible.
Right. Well, there's a pretty active discussion on Django developers, Google group, and also among DSF members about this. So that's...
Hopefully things will come together.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's just, we haven't been together. So like even just on the board, I was the only board member there, but like, you know, we the board could just do a lot of stuff, but if we don't talk to the community, we don't feel like empowered to do that stuff, you know, like,
yes.
So
yes.
These and in-person then, events and DjangoCon Europe, I think there are three board members there. So.
And then, yes, they were. And Haim made this point about in his talk at DjangoCon Europe up on the State of Django. I can't remember the exact topic, but it was one of the last ones on Friday. But he talked about, well, okay, if you don't listen to the podcast or if you don't subscribe to Django News or you're not an individual member of the DSF, we've got no way of contacting you. We've got no way of outreaching. So, okay, there's the blog, but... You know,
Twitter and the blog, is it?
Yeah, Twitter and the blog. And it's like, well, you know, have we got other, can we think of other channels so that we can reach out? Again, on Django Developers just this week, so I think prompted by the discussions coming out of DjangoCon, someone asked a question about, well, what is an individual member and where's it about? Because if you look on the website, it doesn't really say. And then, you know, Tim Schilling, who maintains Django Debug Toolbar and has done for years, he's like, well, I've only just applied to be a member of the DSF. Well, clearly he would be, you know, a candidate, but he doesn't know what it's involved.
He applied last year, but yeah, I've had some discussions with him. Yeah. And you realize someone like this, who's a pillar of the community,
doesn't really know.
And a lot of people wrote in saying, you know, either I don't feel like I'm qualified, which is, you know, it can be anyone, or I don't know what it is involved, and therefore I'm hesitant to put forward because what am I stepping up in for, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, even people like that.
Okay, so there was all these things about the community, which and how we're going to push Django forward, which I think have new life out from, or new impetus from the conference and the buzz coming out of that. I was going to ask you, did you have any other sort of exciting hot takes? I've got one more secret exciting hot take there.
I was
going to ask you first.
Yeah, well, I just to finish up, so a thing I wrote, personal thoughts on the communication bit that we and the board have talked about and, like, you know, could do in 20 minutes is have an official newsletter. Like we could just, like Python has one. Like I just sent it around to some people. We can just put it on the sidebar. But here's the thing. It can't be a board person. Like, so like I'm happy to be the working group of the newsletter, but you know, there's other things to be done, but just like put it up, say someone, all you do is once a month, send it out, repeat what we already have. We can put down the line sponsors on there. Like, boom, like we have to have a newsletter. Like that's kind of what
it would everyone be an easy has outreach
like
channel.
It's 20 minutes. But anyways, yeah, hot take. So I got to sit next to David Lord at the Sprints, who maintains Flask. He lives in San Diego and knows Andrew Godwin and some of the other people. And that was interesting. So he has a full-time job, and then he single-handedly runs Flask and I can't remember a whole bunch of other things in the ecosystem. And he made the point, which I hadn't really realized, that Flask is downloaded 10 times as much as Django. Wow. So, you know, okay, we sit here and say, well, you know, yeah, Flask is for kiddies and add-ons and, you know, it's not for, you know, you know, snarky things like you just rebuilding Django, but like it has unbelievable usage. And he was saying a lot of times in science and other fields where people don't want to be a web developer, they, you know, but it's a professional setting, they're using Flask. But anyways, he's managing all of that. And he was asking about our board, right? Because he was like, wow, seems like Django's figured this out, right? Like there's a whole community. It's not like literally one person who took it over from Armin. And, you know, some of the things we're talking about, he's like, he's being a fellow and a core contributor and everything doing
and a board
on top
member
of,
and all the
and
rest,
not
yeah.
his, and not his day job. And so he's, was asking about, you know, yeah, how do we structure things? Is it possible to have kind of like a fellow-like role? But then there's this huge trust component. There's no clear person to him in the community who could take that on, even if he had the money and everything else to do it. One thing he's done is he's recently gone under the branch of the PSF. So they, if you contribute to Palettes, which is the Flask organization, it routes you to the Python Software Foundation. And in return for, this is public, I think 10%, they handle all the administrative, they handle the processing fees, you know, they let him, which is great, like, because otherwise he can't, you know. So PSF is expanding its umbrella to these areas, because most of these things aren't Django. They don't have conferences. They don't have this wide community, even if they have insane usage. And so they can provide legal accounting. And so that's something that we, Django, can also do. Jeff Triple has been making this point. You know, can we have a more formal liaison with the PSF? And actually tomorrow, Friday, Jeff has set up a call between the PSF executive director, Deb Wilson, the new one, me and Anna, our president. So we're going to chat it out. And that's something that, you know, if not a board member, we should have some direct line of communication beyond, like, I have one with the accountants for conferences, yeah. But like... anyways, long rambling thing. That's my hot take, is that wow Flask, wow David Lord, and like we in the Python community can and should try to pool our resources and share tips on how to make this all sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, sharing resources is the thing. Like Django's tiny, realistically speaking. And if we were able to leverage some of the expertise and know-how of the PSF, that would be great. Why don't we do that? It's probably just an accident of history that we don't do that.
Yeah, they have a new executive director, you know, they've been looking to us, but they've changed a lot the last couple of years. They have a lot of more staff and they still don't have a huge number of people. They've got the whole, PyPI situation going on, but they are the larger organization. Whereas if you asked a Django, a Python developer on the street, they would assume that the PSF and the DSF are equivalent when, you know, our budget's 200,000, their budget is millions and millions. Bless them for it. So what's your hot take?
My hot take was on the first day of the sprint, Simon Winnison came up to me and he's like, it says in the docs that you shouldn't use SQLite in production. And I'm like, and he's like, well, how do we change that? And I said, well, ideally what we need is some benchmarks. We need to know, like, because you get this database, SQLite databases locked error thing that comes up. And when you get concurrent writes, so, you know, you can read from a SQLite database as many times as you want, but if you try and write to it from two separate processes, it blows up. And there's in the existing docs, there's this timeout you can add to. You can add a number of seconds that it will sort of retry for before it raises the same error. And then there's this other thing called the WAL, or the write-ahead lock, where you can write much faster to SQLite. And I was like, but we really have no idea how fast this goes. So Simon, in his brilliance, just whips up a benchmark, puts it all together, and he's like, yep. If you with the default journal mode and no timeout settings and all the rest, you hit this error quite quickly, which is the historical advice. But if you set the timeout to about 20 seconds, it kind of disappears for some, you scale up quite a lot before you hit that error again. But he was like, but then if I enable the WAL mode, the write ahead lock, it just kind of disappears, and 4,000 requests a second sort of thing, and multiple Gunicorn workers, and all the things that you think, no, surely this is going to blow up. The locked error just kind of went away, that benchmark needs a bit of work. If they're more realistic or different write patterns, which will trigger the error, because you can. The write-ahead log isn't flawless. If there's these checkpoints, I forget the details. It's all on the SQLite docs. But you can hit errors. But why aren't we hitting them in Simon's benchmark? I mean, you want the benchmark to hit the expected error at some point, right? Yeah. But the figures he was getting out of his example were more than enough for almost every website you've ever worked on.
Yeah, and he wrote that up, so we'll put the link.
Yeah, right. And so, well, can we in fact change that advice? And can we change that advice and see what we say? Because for a lot of websites, it might be that that's enough. And then it takes if you're running a small site and you're worried about cost, it takes yet another cost center out, because to spin up an RDS or another managed database instance, it's not free at all. Whereas if you've already got a server and you can just put a SQLite folder file on it. It essentially is a sunk cost for what you're already paying.
In volumes on a Docker thing, which all the modern deployment things are using. So you can have persistent storage instead of an ephemeral thing where it gets wiped. That's also seems like,
I'm really excited about that. And I was speaking to Simon Chalette on the way to the airport about it. And he was like, well, but if you need access from multiple hosts and you need to migrate to a different one, you still may be better off starting with Postgres anyway. So that, it's not a totally one-sided story that you should all just use SQLite. But for, where in that measured case you SQLite fits your use case, why not?
I mean, it would make... For teaching, it would make it a lot easier to just say, like for these toy sites, and for in most cases, you can do Postgres. I'll show you that, but you can also just use SQLite. That would lower the barrier. Well, as you're talking, one thing maybe the thing I feel like my biggest contribution is at these sprints, I was sitting with, so David Lord came over, and then he was talking something about automating deployments and asking questions. And someone was like, well, Simon's or Willison is over there. He's he's got hundreds of projects, and should talk to him. We kept talking, and I'm for a developer, I'm outgoing, so I went over and said, "Hey, Simon, could you come over here?" I was like, "Are you in the middle of something?" He's like, "Well, yes." I was like, "Can I bring you over here?" He's like, "Okay." So bless him, he trusted me, and Simon came over, and he and David had never met. I just sort of assumed that these original these gods of web development all are chummy, and some of them are, but it was amazing to see. It was just hey, I'm Simon. I'm David. Obviously they knew who we were, but they'd never met. And then, they were off to the races for, I had to leave for the airport, but an hour in, they were showing all these little things and hacks. And so it's a beautiful thing to see, but it's also a reminder, it's not everyone knows everyone. Right. And especially at these conferences, the bigger point I want to make is I think Tim Schilling was tweeting about this, but most developers are a little more on the introverted scale. So it's just natural in conferences. Not every interaction is going to be smooth, but everyone is there and trying and wants to engage. If they don't, they can go to their room, So taking that extra step to, if you know that two people might work well with one another, or don't know each other, is always worth it.
Well done. Yeah, no, exactly. And even Simon, you know, superstars, I say Simon, like even, you know, even superstars that you think, oh, wow, they must be really, that can be shy people, you know, too. And they're feeling it just as much as you are when you're a bit nervous about talking to people. Like it's not you, it's everybody.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, but come on, let's call it a day. That's plenty to talk about. Really exciting and good to be back. And anyway, I've got some such warm DjangoCon feelings.
Yes, likewise. And lots going on. So check out the newsletter. Check out, you're already on the podcast. Check out the podcast. We'll put links, but I think there's changes afoot. And if you want to get involved, raise a hand. We're going to try to have working groups and all these other areas so people can act on it. It's not just the board, and we can keep the momentum going.
Well, that was it. We are going. Will you see us?
Yes. Out? Okay. Yeah. DjangoChat.com, chat Django on Twitter, and we'll see you all next time. Bye bye.
Join us next time. Bye bye.